Fernando Tatis Jr. will win National League MVP as a shortstop for the San Diego Padres. It just didn't happen in 2021. You're listening to the On Fire podcast, brought to you by NBC7. I'm Darnay Tripp with Derek Togerson. Just minutes after Tatis finished third, and I don't think Ohtani's been announced yet, but we assume that will be the case. Derek, how are you? Good catching up.
Yeah, you too. I mean, I'm not upset about this one at all.
Right.
You know, I mean, everybody's deserving. Had the Padres not totally collapsed, maybe we'd have a little bit of a different argument. If Ohtani doesn't win, then we're all going to throw a fit in the middle of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's not acceptable. But this one, I mean, Bryce Harper had a great year. Juan Soto had a great year. Mm-hmm. It's you got the first top three finalists, and it's kind of a coin flip at that point. And I got no problem with Harper winning this award.
Well, before we throw any fits or get any further, we want to show our appreciation for the sponsor of the On Fire podcast. That is OGs. Come watch your sport of choice at OGs. Football on the weekends, NBA, NHL, whatever else is going on. 10 OGs craft beers on tap. They're brewed here in Southern California. They've been around for over 30 years. They're celebrating all year long. Visit or reach out to your local OGs to see any specials and happy hour details. And oh, by the way, they just found out that their McGarvey Scottish Ale won another beer award. They took home a bronze medal in the bitter and Scottish ale category at the San Diego International Beer Competition. Obviously, tons of competition here in town because of the number of fantastic breweries we are blessed to have. This is McGarvey's eighth award that it has received. So congratulations to them. Fitting that we're talking awards on the day where baseball fans everywhere are discussing awards with the MVP headlining the week. And for the second straight year, he wasn't a finalist last year, but Tatis was in the conversation for much of last year. And again, wasn't a finalist, finished fourth. Now back-to-back years where he's top four at the age of 22. Pretty incredible. You can definitely feel good about that, even though the award is in the hands of Phillies outfielder Bryce Harper for the second year of his career, second time of his career.
Yeah, he went from 3 to 4. You know, next year, 3 to 2, and then he wins 6 in a row.
Exactly. Once he breaks through, it's curtains for everybody else.
It's like Michael Jordan having to learn how to beat the Pistons. You know, once he did it, he never lost to him again.
And, you know, that's something I thought about asking Tatis, and I can't remember if it came up last year. You know, there's so many other things going on once we got to kind of spring training at that point with his contract and all the upgrades that the Padres made and coming off such a fantastic season and now back-to-back years. It's something I'd be curious to get his kind of unfiltered thoughts on, like, what have you learned to this point in your career about what it takes and what is required of you to actually do that? Because this is now 2 years in a row where you could pinpoint, you know, you could find a point in the season where he was the front runner for National League MVP in 2020 and in 2021. And, you know, in 2020 it was a matter of a rough September and Freddie Freeman tore the cover off the baseball and helped the Braves win their division. And this year, whether it's the injuries, whether, you know, he never really went into a drought. Shohei Ohtani just won AL MVP, so you don't have to worry about throwing your fit.
Oh, thank goodness.
He never, you know, had that rough patch that he had in September, which really felt like the first and maybe the only real, you know, slump of his career. But numbers, you know, tailed off a little bit. And obviously the performance of the team didn't help. And there was the injuries and shuffling positions that just kind of took some of the steam out of his season. But I'd be curious, like, when he's having kind of conversations with his dad and his closest friends and advisors and trusted people, like what his takeaway is from the last couple of seasons about being there, but just not quite taking that last step to kind of secure the trophy.
Well, last year it was because he had a slump at the end of the year and was that last month in a 60-game season. Well, 3 weeks can really do you in, whereas Freddie Freeman had his bad 3 weeks at the very beginning. Tatis had his bad 3 weeks at the very end. And again, it was fantastic in the playoffs, but that's what hurt you. And then this year, he was fantastic pretty much every time he was in the game, and it was the Padres as a team that fell apart and hurt him. So hopefully next year, he finishes strong, and the Padres finish strong, and we don't have to have this conversation because he's a runaway, no-brainer, everybody unanimous vote type of candidate.
And it looks as though, yeah, Ohtani was the unanimous AL MVP. So even less reason for you to. I know you came here primed just in case there was a surprise. But
well, you can never trust these people. You know, no. The baseball voters are a fickle group. And by fickle, I mean, by and large, very arrogant. And so some of them will not vote for a pitcher, and some of them will not vote for a DH. And then he had a pitcher DH. So I was literally fearing that these people will go, well, yeah, I'm going to stick to that old, a pitcher can't win it and a DH can't win it, and give it to, you know, Vlad or something like that. I'm still shocked that Marcus Semien was a finalist and Salvador Perez was not. A guy who had the greatest offensive season for a catcher in Major League Baseball history, and he's not one of the top three players in the league.
Yeah.
That one blew my mind. And when I saw that, I'm like, well, anything can happen at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, Vlad had a strong start, and Vlad's offensive numbers ended up being better than Otani's, but Otani, just full body of work, what he does is just so incredible and unlike anything we've ever seen before. And so it just seemed fitting from that standpoint. And I do think, like, you know, regardless of the sport, there are people, voters, who, you know, maybe try and outsmart everybody else and aren't willing to accept kind of the obvious answer. And there's also kind of like, and I think this is where I sometimes struggle, because as a sports fan, my natural inclination isn't necessarily just to dive into baseball reference or whatever the sport is, you know, going heavy into every single numbers with a fine-tooth comb to, you know, figure out the separate. I enjoy a good narrative. I enjoy a good story. And when somebody asks you about the 2021 season, Major League Baseball, one of the first things that's going to come to anybody's mind is Shohei Ohtani. Now, is that reason enough for somebody to win an MVP? I don't know. There's got to be a balance of the two. That's where it gets tricky. And with somebody like, I think that applies to a degree with Fernando Tatis Jr., because he is so electrifying. He is just beloved in the sport. We saw the scene in Philadelphia. That doesn't happen very often. Where
it doesn't happen, period. It doesn't happen. Where an opposing players show that kind of reception.
And so he just has that air about him. Now, do you give out trophies just based on that? No, not necessarily. But I do think that factors in. But again, that's what's tricky about this process is everybody looks at it differently. And for some people, that might mean nothing to them. And at the end of the day, they just want to look at a couple spreadsheets and figure out like whose numbers, you know, stand out above the other without kind of that human emotional element. To me, just as a sports fan, I appreciate that part of it. And as incredible as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was, again, when you think of 2021, you're going to think of Shohei Ohtani pretty much right away.
Yeah, but then also, which numbers are you talking about?
Yep.
So which numbers do you hold in higher regard? Is it OPS plus? Is it WAR? Is it games played? Is it traditional home run RBI batting average? Is it, what is it? Is it when you did those things? Is it when you have, what your numbers are compared to the other guys and your contemporaries? Does position matter? Does base running matter? A lot of people, they look at it and go, oh, wait, I don't care about base running. Fernando Tatis Jr. was darn near 10 runs as a base runner, plus 10 runs as a base runner this year. Nobody's even close to that. So if you look at an all-around player, it's hard to argue that he's not number one on that list, even with what Bryce Harper and Juan Soto did this year. But again, Harper's hot stretch, you know, hot streak, basically almost single-handedly kept Philadelphia in the playoff race until the last few days of the season. So that got him a lot of votes.
It is pretty incredible looking at the spreadsheet with the AL. It's just popped up on Twitter. And, you know, they have first through 10th. And Ohtani has a 30 in the first column, nothing in the rest. You know, Vladimir Guerrero, 29 votes in the second place category, one in the third, where it was far more spread out between Soto, Harper, Tatis, Brandon Crawford getting 4 first place votes,
yeah, that's
as opposed
stupid.
To 2. Do you want to throw a fit about that? Because I think plenty of San Diego would be happy to hear it.
No, there's no reason to throw a fit about that, because that's idiocy. That's there's no, like, how? I said, how? How is that? How in, okay, just in the shortstop position, how do you look at Brandon Crawford's numbers and look at his impact and Fernando Tatis Jr.'s numbers and his impact and think, oh yeah, that dude up in San Francisco was better this year than Tatis. It If you think that, you lose your vote. Or do us all a favor and just don't vote because you're a moron.
Well, and that's where the team success comes in and not knowing if that's a factor. And
well, then Buster Posey should have gotten votes over Brandon Crawford.
Yeah.
If that's the rationale.
Yeah. But again, it's so tricky. And I reached out to some folks who, baseball experts, national writers, who just have a broader view than I do, at least personally here in San Diego, just to kind of gauge with them. And one of them mentioned, like, you know, if they seem to almost be relieved that the playoff thing wasn't a factor in the race. And if the Padres had at least held on, even if they didn't, you know, play over 500 baseball from August on and just cruise into the wild card, even if they just made the playoffs, that would have been a feather in his cap to some degree. And I think there's plenty of people in baseball that are like, how much do we really want to have that weigh in? You know, and when it comes to the most valuable player award, is that important? And I think if you ask different people, you're going to get different answers. And I think Brandon Crawford is a great example of a guy who had a very good season. But, you know, if the Giants hadn't made the playoffs and been the biggest surprise in baseball, would he get 4 first place votes? Probably not.
See, that's just somebody who just says, who's one of the best players on the best team in the league?
Right.
And they don't look at anything else. And that's what people, that's like a Heisman Trophy vote. It's like, he's the best player on the number one team in the country. Okay, so he just gets my vote. Even if he's not the best player in the country, he's just the best player on the best team in the country who might not be the best player in the country. That's what they did for Brandon Crawford, which is moronic. It's completely freaking moronic. I would love to know who those people are who did that and sit down with them and not have a drink with them, throw drinks at them. Because that blows my mind. You call yourself a baseball expert and you're doing crap like that.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I refuse to get it. I will not get it. And I'm not even saying vote for Tatis. I'm saying vote for anybody who finished in the top 3. Soto's more deserving. Right. Harper was more deserving. The 50 guys are more deserving than what Brandon Crawford did this year.
Well,
it's nuts.
And like you said, certainly those top 3.
By the way, you want to talk about taking winning into consideration? How about this? The Angels in the last 8 years have had 4 MVPs and 2 winning records.
It's insane. Just
so that's either A, they've got 2 of the greatest players in the history of the game and simply don't know how to build around them, or B, it's A.
Well, and that's where baseball differentiates from some other sport. I mean, in the NBA, if you have the most valuable player, there's 5 guys on the floor at the time. And if 20% of the guys that you have on the floor are the league MVP, like, how do you not make the play? Like, that seems, that would be difficult to fathom. I don't know if that's ever happened. I can't think off the top of my head. You know, NFL, you know, usually it's a quarterback. If you have one of the top quarterbacks in the league, you're typically, you know, a playoff type team. So it's just, baseball is different from that standpoint because you need so many different pieces, and you can have Mike Trout in the outfield mashing, being, you know, a generational talent. But if you don't have a rotation, if you don't have any protection in the lineup, it's not going to do a whole lot for you. And so that's, again, it's where baseball is tricky and probably why there's plenty of voters out there that just completely disregard a team's record and success when it comes to this.
Yeah, and then other guys will absolutely look at it because how valuable can you be if your team's not winning? Well, you can be really valuable because your team would have lost 10 more games.
Right, yeah.
You wouldn't have gotten 78 wins. You would have been 68 wins. Now how valuable is that guy?
Right, yeah. And so, again, I think, and you and I were chatting about this briefly before we started, but it's just, it's so hard to know. Like, just thinking about the race and thinking about, you know, the 3 guys that are up for it in the National League and where Fernando Tatis Jr. ranks amongst them, it's just really hard, especially for, you know, a casual fan to really have any clue what direction it's going unless you're looking at the Vegas odds, unless you're looking at projections from national writers, because somebody could sit here and make an argument for or against all 3 of those guys, And I could listen to them, and as soon as they're done talking, be like, you're 100% right. You know what I mean? And then they go from describing Soto's greatness to Tatis, and I'd be like, well, why wouldn't Tatis win? And then they go to Harper and be like, well, he's obviously the guy. There's just so many numbers, and there's so much information, but it's so difficult to tell what actually matters and what differentiates a guy from another. And so, you know, especially in a tight race, Freddie Freeman, we kind of knew last year. Shohei Ohtani kind of knew this year, but when it is competitive and there isn't a clear guy, just like there was in the NL with the finalists this year, it's really, really difficult.
Yeah, and you still, though, you can listen to an argument for Harper or Soto or Tatis. You cannot make an argument for Brandon Crawford. You literally cannot do it.
But the Giants, Derek, the Giants.
No, not no. No and no. Just no.
That's
all I have to say about that.
There's always a shock, and that was kind of the shock of this round. In your estimation, what was it that kept Tatis? Like, if you had to pinpoint the factors that worked against Tatis in this case, what would you say?
The biggest ones are probably the fact he only played 130 games. Which Harper only played 142, right? And both of them missed time with injuries.
Soto was 151.
But missing 32 games that's almost a fifth of the season. So that's a lot. That's a lot in baseball terms. And the other one is probably the defense. The defensive component, whereas Harper or Soto aren't fantastic defensive players. Man, Fernando's defensive numbers this year, early in the year, with the especially throwing from shortstop, which again may have been the fact he was adjusting to a new brace and figuring out how to throw the ball and
finishing his swing and all that.
It was his numbers were terrible at the beginning of the year. Now, by the end of the year, his outs above average was actually on the positive side, so he got a lot better as year went on. But just remembering all those errors, I think, just kind of stuck in a lot of people's heads.
Yeah, and they accumulated so fast. It was like on a nightly basis we were talking about Tatis' errors. I think, again, just from what I heard from other folks, the defensive side, because it's, and we've discussed this, it's easy to look at it and be like, well, those guys play in less impactful defensive positions and neither one of them are necessarily known for their glove. It wasn't necessarily Tatis being docked points as much as it was an opportunity for him to, like, make a strong case for himself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because he plays a premium position.
And if he played at the level that he played in 2020, then
he's a no-brainer.
No-brainer.
Yeah. And he does what he does on the base paths, and he does, you know, he still puts up the 42 bombs and darn near 100 runs batted and hitting all over the lineup. I mean, I think people took a good look at him and said, I also think age has something to do with this. I think he's 22. Soto just turned 23. I think a lot of voters, and I'll say what a lot of voters probably did. They probably looked at it and said, we're pretty close on here. These guys will have plenty of chances to win one. Let's go with the more established guy. I'm pretty sure that entered the thinking, which is, again, stupid.
Yeah.
Because Harper has one, and he wanted it about the same age. So that doesn't hold a lot of weight for me, but I know there are people out there who did consider that as a factor.
You mentioned Tatis, and he does impact the game in more ways than pretty much anybody. I mean, you could make, obviously, Shohei Ohtani's right there. But in terms of the guys that were up for the vote, and I think you mentioned stolen bases, that's the crazy thing is I think he ended up with 25 in the year, but after July 22nd, he had two stolen bases after July 22nd. And he suffers that second injury, which came on the slide, and that was an obvious adjustment they made reining him back from that standpoint, which again just takes away from his impact. That's instead of stealing some astronomical number of bases, he ends up with 25, and which would then account for fewer runs scored. You'd think that would add to that total as well. So there's just a number of things that kind of hamstrung him a little bit. And the fact that he did this in spite of all that is incredible. You know, that he had the type of year when he injured his shoulder, and there was that scene in, what was it, April 9th, not knowing what was going to happen the rest of the season. We're on this podcast talking about they shut him down, and he is able to play 130 games is incredible, and came back from that second re-injury, and it didn't sound great. You know, Tingler was talking about it, you know, being tighter than it was and not loosening up as quickly as previous instances, which obviously gives you cause for concern. And then he comes back and, you know, what was it? What did he do that game against the Diamondbacks? 4 RBIs, 4 hits, 2 homers, you know what I mean? And managed to stay healthy the rest of the way and, you know, put up pretty respectable numbers and then some. You know, just goes to show how incredible of a talent he is. He just, for whatever reason, just not at that level. Something.
Well, let me ask you this, because there's another factor we have not talked about yet.
Okay.
Do you think voters are turned off by the flair?
I would hope not. I think.
But do you think voters were turned off by the flair?
I would say no to the flair. I would say potentially yes to, I would say yes to the fact that the flair was kind of gone for a while, and the fact that he didn't seem to be enjoying himself, and there was the dust up with Manny Machado. I would tend to think that there was more people that seemed to be turned off by, is he pouty? Is he feeling sorry for himself? What happened to the spark and the joy that he plays with? I think that was noticeably absent. And I'm not trying to criticize here. I'm just trying to get in the mind of voters. I could see from an outside perspective how you would say, well, this guy, you know, he doesn't have the normal juice, and the clubhouse isn't a good place, and he got into it with Manny Machado. You know, maybe this just isn't the guy. I don't necessarily think, and I really hope I'm wrong, and I'm curious what you think about this. I oh gosh, in 2021, you know, whatever progress I think we've made in the game, you know, through the years, and certainly these last couple years when we seem to be accepting more of these personalities, but I think we all know there's also folks around the game and that report on the game that don't appreciate it the way that we do, the personality and the flair and the extravagance. Sure, that could be a factor, but if I had to guess, it's more so just kind of seeing him kind of go quiet and the team struggle and some of the friction that was present, you know, as the team struggled.
Yeah, I think the friction has something to do with it. I think absolutely there are people out there who votes for these kinds of things who don't like the way he plays the game still. And as much as we'd like to think that kind of stuff doesn't exist and that thought process doesn't exist because of how good we all know it is for the game, it's still there.
Sure.
There's a lot of stuff in this country and beliefs in this that shouldn't be around and probably never should have, that are still around, that we need to get the freaking rid of. Baseball is every bit as bad and stuck in its ways in a lot of different places as anything else is. So I guarantee you there are voters out there who are like, I don't like the stutter step around third base. No vote. You know, they will do that.
You're probably right. You're probably right. And we will find out when there is a year, if it's next year or the year after, where he just has ungodly numbers and is impossible to ignore and argue against as an MVP candidate when you see you know, fewer votes than you would expect. Maybe there's some truth to that, but yeah, sadly you're probably correct. This might be a super dumb take, and I'm willing to accept this being a dumb take. And I thought about this during the season because we obviously knew he would be kind of in the conversation for MVP. Look, there's never a bad time to win MVP, but this might have been kind of a weird year for him to win MVP. Is that fair to say? Just because yeah, it wasn't like last year where the team does something incredible and there's so much joy and excitement around the team because of the last couple months and how weird it was just in terms of the way they performed and strange clubhouse dynamics. Like it's I don't know. It would be fun to win. You take it whenever you can get it and nobody would ever complain. But just again, going back to like, I like narratives. I like a good story. And man, you could wrap this up into a nice, tidy package if everybody was getting along, if they they kept playing at a high level. If, you know, he just, if he continued to exude that joy that we're so accustomed to seeing through the course of the year, it just would be a weird thing to kind of wrap your head around if he had won it in a season like this, where he's dealing with the injuries. He's, you know, figuring out how to be the guy and what it takes from a leadership standpoint, and watching his team struggle, and himself and others talking about how, you know, it's difficult to smile and keep up that enthusiasm when your team is struggling. Well, sometimes you just got to kind of fake it. I don't know. Am I an idiot for thinking just from that standpoint, it would just be a little bit of a strange thing to process given what we saw from the team the last couple of months of the season?
No, because then it goes to show you that they have moved on from the team performance aspect of it. Now, if you do you want a guy who's going to be a clubhouse leader? You know, is that something that shows a layer of being valuable? I'm sure some voters think that. And if you're spatting with players in the full view of everyone in the dugout instead of taking it back into the clubhouse, which a lot of people think you should handle those kinds of things internally, not let it be seen out on the field, not let it be seen in public, then yeah, I think you're right. That kind of thing probably would be held against him.
I don't know. That's something that's been rattling around in my head, and I don't know if I explained it very well, but
I think you're on the right track. I think what you're saying is if you're valuable, you're a leader. And if you are pouting and getting into spats in the dugout, you're not a leader, therefore it cuts down on how valuable you can be.
Well, yeah, to a degree. I mean, I don't want to make it too much about that. I think it's just the whole package. It's what happened with the team, all of that. It was just one of those seasons. It was just, at the end, you didn't necessarily feel good about how the season went. I guess that's probably the best way of describing it, because of the shoulder injuries, him missing time, and then what happened with the team. You want an MVP season to be the type of season where, like, from beginning to end, and there's going to be ebbs and flows, but beginning to end, like, you can just feel enthusiastic and excited about it. And there wasn't that feeling, if we're being honest, last couple months of the season. Not to say that he didn't have incredible moments along the way and was still super dynamic even through it all. It was just kind of a weird year. And I look forward to the type of season where he hopefully stays healthy, the team performs to its capabilities, and there's going to be struggles and slumps through the course of a 162 game season, but they avoid anything like what we saw this year, and you can just kind of ride that high, hopefully into the postseason and hopefully to an MVP. It was just a weird year. I guess that's all I'm saying. It was a really weird year. I'm sure there's plenty of players that have won MVP awards after weird, strange seasons. But I don't know. It was a weird year. It was a really weird year.
Yeah, it was a weird year. And what's crazy is all of the MVP finalists, none of them played in the postseason.
It's crazy.
Which is really odd.
Yeah. So, okay, we kind of touched on this. How do we, like, what matters? And from your standpoint, what matters? Should we just look at WAR and whoever's at the top of the table, find a WAR equation that everybody agrees on, and then just hand the award to whoever? Is it OPS plus? Is it, like, what? How do we come up with a tidy way?
Well, you can't, because there's no metric you can come up with that can measure all the different things a baseball player has to do.
Yeah.
You can't come up with offensive production and base running and defensive metrics all into one stat. That's impossible. If it was possible, it would have happened by now. So you can't do one set of numbers for everything a ball player has to do. Right? You just can't. So that they can't just be a, you know, mathematical equation that you put it all in and spits it out and here's the best player in the league.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist.
It'd be nice if it did. It would make this whole process a lot easier.
Well, it also we wouldn't be able to chirp about how stupid some people are, and that would give us less to talk about on the podcast.
That's true. And I mean, I definitely remember thinking at points like, it would be a lot less fun if it came down to something that simple and direct. But again, just viewing all this from a distance, it's a tricky thing to kind of navigate and make sense of.
Incredibly.
And, you know, hopefully there will be a season where, and I'm pretty confident there's going to be a season where Fernando Tatis Jr. is the Freddie Freeman or the Shohei Ohtani that we've seen the last couple of years. And instead, it's just us approaching it that way and celebrating the fact from, you know, the beginning of October to mid-November that he's going to get that award. And it's well-deserved and just another line on a resume that is pretty deep at this point through 3 years in his career, which is incredible.
Amen.
I had something. Sorry, this is backtracking a little bit. This is when you're talking about the leadership standpoint, and this is something that I meant to touch on in the Bob Melvin pod after we heard from him. That one reason I'm excited about Bob Melvin, and you were talking about Fernando Tatis as a leader. And to this point, it's kind of been like a lead by example type thing. You talk about all the time when he walks into the clubhouse, he commands attention. Guys just look at him. We've seen what happens on the field. We saw what happened in game 2 against the Cardinals. As he goes, this club often goes and just is that energizer, that spark plug. And when Melvin was asked about Tatis at his presser, he talked about letting young guys lead. And how important that is and how it's changed through time. So it used to be the veterans leading, but now it's the young guys that lead. And he talked about how important it is to empower those leaders and let them kind of, again, take the lead within the clubhouse and let guys follow. And so I'm really excited about Bob Melvin from that standpoint and seeing what he can unlock in Fernando. Because I don't think, and this isn't a criticism of Fernando Tatis Jr. I think it's just like, I don't think he's wired to be super talkative and super chatty and yapping at guys and that sort of thing, the way a traditional vocal leader might. I think for him, it's just like, let me get my boys going by something I do on the field and let me energize them in that sense. And by having fun and being exciting, hopefully that spreads, which is great. These are all wonderful qualities. I'm curious what Bob Melvin might be able to unlock in Fernando Tatis Jr. from Hello. From a more traditional...
The dogs agree completely. Hang on a sec.
Clearly, I'm making a fantastic point or a terrible point, and they're yelling at me. But I think that's one of the interesting things with Bob Melvin, having done that, having been around young players and been around exciting, exuberant talents, explosive talents, unique type players. He talked about Yoenis Cespedes. And so what does that mean for Fernando Tatis Jr. and what is he able to bring out of him from that kind of more traditional leadership standpoint?
Well, Bob Melvin has had to do that because he's had so many young guys, especially in Oakland. You know, it's a constant revolving door. Josh Donaldson becomes a leader. Josh Donaldson leaves. He's had to go through a bunch of Marcus Semien becomes a leader. Marcus Semien leaves because they don't hold on to these kinds of guys.
Yeah.
So he's had to do this a lot. So he's uniquely experienced in this type of regard. So if anybody could figure out whatever the formula is to let the young, talented, obviously talented guys who the clubhouse looks up to find a way to kind of take the helm on that, then he's got the secret sauce. And obviously it's been working for him for a while.
Yeah, no doubt. And there's been a clear kind of leadership shift within the clubhouse, at least from what we can see. We don't know what goes on behind closed doors. And, you know, whether or not the fan base wants to accept it, guys in the team have talked about Eric Hosmer and his leadership and that being important. And maybe it's gotten less crucial over the last couple of years as Tatis has become Fernando Tatis Jr. and as Manny Machado has clearly assumed some of those responsibilities. So it'll be interesting to see how that continues to evolve under new leadership, and maybe the fact that there is an experienced manager has something to do with it, and not a young guy who in Tingler who can't necessarily command the room the same way, and which would lead to more responsibility on some of the guys in the clubhouse. I don't know. Something that caught my ear when we heard from Bob Melvin, and I've just ever since then I've been curious to see how it kind of plays out.
You let the best players on the team lead. That's it. Period. Paragraph. End of discussion. Now here's the thing with Eric Hosmer is when he first got here, he was one of the best players on the team because there is such a dearth in talent. He now is no longer in the top 10 of the best players on this team, best position players on this team.
Yeah.
So he might have the resume because he's got that World Series ring from Kansas City back when he was actually, you know, a good hustling ball player. Now he didn't have that same kind of appeal. And when players see a first baseman who's supposed to be a leader quitting on a ground ball to the right side that your young, hungry, all-star second baseman is busting his tail to get over to, and you screw him over because you simply don't get back to the bag, nobody wants to listen to him anymore. So now, this is where one of the reasons that Jace Tingler went so wrong is he kept relying on those guys with the old reputations to be the leaders and didn't understand that those guys had lost the ability to lead. Yeah. So you got to hand it over to the guys who are the alphas. And Fernando Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado are undoubtedly the alphas. And Bob Melvin's going to figure that out, I think, pretty quick.
Yeah, if he hasn't already. All right, well, that was a fun conversation, and it was I enjoyed kind of digging into it just because, you know, it's been on everybody's mind the last week or so, and we kind of had an idea of how things were going to play out today, and there weren't any surprises. Oh, by the way, you know, MLB Network does a fine job with these presentations, but as much as I love Michael Jack Schmidt, doesn't that just kind of take away from the surprise? If it was like, if there is a race where you're really unsure who the person is that's going to win, I don't know if I bring in, because who'd they have last year? They had last year somebody from the Braves. I can't remember off the top of my head.
It might have been Hank Aaron, wouldn't it?
No. Who was it? I can't remember.
Well, they're going to keep doing stuff like that. It creates a very interesting dynamic because, as you know, the only player to win the MVP award in Washington Nationals history is
Bryce Harper.
Bryce Harper.
So he's going to give it to he's going to announce
and the only player to win in Padres history is Ken Caminiti, who unfortunately is no longer with us. So if you're going to go with another MVP from that organization, you've got either A, no options from the Padres, or B, a really, really awkward situation with Harper.
But it takes away from some of the – it's a cool moment, don't get me wrong. But maybe just find some other generic baseball legend that played in the National League to give it away that doesn't have a clear connection to any of the other teams or the franchises. Again, we kind of knew it was Bryce Harper, but – you know, if there is a year where we're all sitting on the edge of our seats, like, I have no idea, then, you know, we'll know once that interview starts. And we're like, oh, well, so much for that, you know. But anyways, that, I guess that's probably not the most important thing in the world. What it's been from a free agency offseason hot stove standpoint, just to kind of quickly put a button on this episode, been fairly quiet. Nothing really to, you know, it's all kind of speculation at this point. I think the one of the things that is...
Can we speculate on the current ineptitude level of the Angels giving Noah Syndergaard, who's pitched two games in 2 years,
two innings.
$20 million?
2 innings since 2019. Yeah, we'll see. I guess, I mean, it's they're buying... I was going to say buying low, but you don't pay $21 million when you're buying low. Yeah, that's...
I didn't get that. I don't get that at all. I get the Astros bringing back Verlander completely.
Yeah.
I do not comprehend one bit giving that much money to a guy like Syndergaard. Because, I mean, at least with Verlander, like, you've seen what he could do. He won a World Series with you. Like, he's got a history with your organization. He's a fan favorite. You get some kind of return on your investment there. Syndergaard has been broken goods for a while now. Tommy John was not the first injury that he's gone through, or it really pretty much was for the most part for Verlander. And you're going to go out and give it no tie to the fan base, no tie to Southern California. I mean, he's from Texas. Like, I don't get it. And you start to think, well, this is exactly why the Angels have four MVP awards in 8 years and two winning records in 8 years.
I don't know what their payroll looks like and how much money they have to spend. You know, maybe it's just the type of situation where, you know, they could afford to give a guy a pricey prove it deal and hope that it works out in their favor and they address one of the weaknesses in a roster and a little more star power in that clubhouse and you know, Syndergaard's what, 29 years old, and bet on kind of the stuff that he has shown through the course of his career? I don't know. I think there's a lot of people skeptical, you know, especially him. He got the qualifying offer and then turned it down, right? And so,
He didn't even have a chance to. He was going to take it. The only reason he said no to it is because the Angels offered more.
Amen. Yeah, gotcha. I don't know.
We know Artie Moreno spends money. He always has. Yeah. He just spends it in the worst places possible.
But if Syndergaard is healthy in Syndergaard, 1 year, 21, if he likes it there, then try and lock him down for 4 years after that to get him into his early mid-30s.
There's some potential there. Syndergaard got offered the qualifying offer this year. You can't give it to him again next year.
Yeah.
So you either have to extend him,
yeah,
or you lose him for nothing.
They are a curious franchise, aren't they?
Yeah, they're weird, man. They're just run in a very, very strange way. And then, of course, the Mets in there, you know, I think they're trying to be as inept as they are. They go out and hire the former GM and Billy Hepler of the Angels. Like, what are you people doing?
Yeah, that would be a rough. I've got some friends that are Mets fans, and I do not envy them at this point in time. Been a rough.
Do the Mets even have a manager yet?
Rough go of it. I don't believe so. Rojas went cross town to become the third base coach for the Yankees. No, they don't have a manager.
And Mike Schilt, who was a finalist for the Manager of the Year award, is sitting right there.
There's some Buck Showalter chatter with the Mets. Oh, Brad Ausmus as well. So, you know, San Diego, they're not the only ones.
Man, that's just weird, man. The Mets and the Angels, two of the teams with deep pockets and the two biggest markets, cannot figure it out.
Here's what's jumped out to me. We did our episode last week, each sharing our top five, our wish list for free agency for the Padres.
Right.
Check that out in the last episode if you haven't already. And we both had the same guy at number one, which was?
Starling Marte.
And there's been some chatter about Starling Marte. And we've seen a number of teams. And the team I haven't seen mentioned are the Padres. Astros, I think, is a recent kind of favorite or squad out there that's taken a hard look at him. It's always hard to tell, you know, especially with AJ Preller. He doesn't always necessarily take the obvious path, and there are the financials that need to be considered given the state of affairs. So maybe that's getting in the way, but, you know, that's a guy that once the rumor mill started turning, I was curious, okay, are we going to see the Padres in play for him? And that hasn't been the case, and so we'll see.
Yeah, he's a guy who is going to not be probably the first outfielder to sign. The Nick Castellanos's of the world will probably try and, you know, set the market when it comes to the outfielders. But that's a dude, just forget about what the market is. Go out and get him. And I know that there's no CBA and there's going to be a lockout. We don't know what the luxury tax threshold is going to be. And a lot of these teams are kind of holding off on that until they can see what they're doing, especially teams like the Padres who are that close. That's why the Tigers can go and sign Carlos Correa right now and not have a worry about it, because they're so far below the luxury tax threshold anyway. It's teams like the Padres and the Dodgers who are going to have to kind of bide their time and figure out what they're really dealing with before they can jump in with 2 feet into the free agent pool.
And another is Seiya Suzuki, who people expect to be posted and have a chance to come over. And that's a guy that I think is on the wish list for a lot of Padres, among a lot of Padres fans. But how realistic is that? You haven't seen, it sounds like the Rangers, John Morosi was saying, are going hard at him. And so that could be a possibility. But just in seeing these kind of potential targets, you're just not seeing a whole lot of chatter. At least I haven't, in terms of guys being connected to the Padres, being pursued by the Padres. And you got to think just the financials are a big part of that, on top of the uncertainty and just the potential for reshuffling the roster. But until that happens, you're a little bit strapped in terms of what you can do, what you can offer up financially.
Yeah, so we're going to have to wait a little while on that.
Well, I think that what you just said might be a header just for the entire Major League Baseball offseason. We're going to have to wait a little on that.
Oh, yeah. We have to wait a lot on that, actually.
Well, what we know for now is that it'll be another year when Fernando Tatis Jr. wins MVP. Not happening right now. Not happening in 2021. Incredible season. Again, there is certainly an argument to be made for him, and folks have done that, but doesn't go his way. It's Harper and Ohtani in 2021, and we'll see what kind of MVP caliber season Tatis puts together next year. That's a cool thing about him is, like, after his rookie season, plays 84 games, get an idea, like, this guy's really good, really exciting. Last season rolls around, and, like, okay, what does year two look like? You know, how does he continue to grow and adjust? And fantastic again, fourth in MVP voting. And this year, despite everything that was thrown at him, he puts together another elite season. And so
I'm give you a prediction for next year right now, right?
Okay.
And you can bring this back next year if it doesn't happen. I'm putting my name on it. In 2022, Fernando Tatis Jr. will be the first clean shortstop ever to hit 50 homers in a season.
Mm. I mean, why not? How many stolen bases does he? Is he allowed to steal bases? Like, is he putting up a 50-40 season?
He could. That's what's nuts, is he could. I don't think he will, because he's going to have to, you know, either figure out something to do with that, the way he slides or something. I don't know, something. He's going to, I'm sure, dial that back a little bit. But 50-20, I think, is certainly capable.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. It all kind of depends. But if he's healthy, I mean, that's the thing that's crazy, is like 42 in what were his 162 game? I know Baseball Reference has this.
Well, 42 in 130.
His 162 game projections. I'm trying to try and find those for this season.
Well, what's 130 divided by 42?
Well, let me consult my calculator.
Yeah, we got two people trying to do math live on a podcast.
This is great. Never works out well. This is great.
So just about every three games he hits a bomb.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you give him, let's say, 20 more games, he plays 150, which I think is, although if there's going to be a DH, you can move him up to 155, no problem, because he'll get the at bats.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives him another seven right there, which means he has to run into one more, right? And if you add up the innings that he missed leaving games early, 50 bombs.
Times 42. Yeah, so if you project to 162, he's at 52 homers, which is wild.
Isn't it great?
And so all that to say, it's like there's no reason to believe that from now until the end of time, he won't be, putting it conservatively, top five in NL MVP voting every single season.
Oh, he's going to be the National League Mike Trout when it comes to MVP voting. You know, every year he's in the top five, mm-hmm. every single year. Just pencil him in. Every year he's healthy, top five. Just bank it.
And he's done that with basically rookie managers. Like, what's the Bob? Oh, yeah. What's the Bob Melvin effect? It's like not that he needs, you know, to be souped up any more than he already is. But what's the impact of one of the best managers in the game? Not just, we've talked about it from a kind of a leadership standpoint, but from a performance standpoint. Like, what does that unlock in him? Maybe that's the little extra difference. Or maybe if he does start to slump a little bit, maybe Melvin has kind of...
He truncates it. Yeah, he keeps his slump from getting... He keeps it to three games instead of a week and a half. Right, exactly. And plus, I mean, he's 22. He's still got baby fat on him.
Does like, he?
He's still growing into his body.
I don't know that he does.
He's going to get stronger.
Yeah. Yeah, scary to think about him in his athletic prime. Which is
which isn't
like
for another couple of years.
Like late 20s?
Oh, yeah. Athletic prime, you hit right around 25, 26, 27, right there. And it's like he's still 4 years away from entering his prime. Yeah. Like Manny Machado just entered his prime, which is nuts to think about.
Yeah. So we got that going for us, you know?
And Eric Hosmer just exited his prime, which is also nuts to think about.
Upwards of 13 plus more seasons where, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. is in the mix, and it's a bummer that it didn't go his way this year. It would have been awesome to see. Again, there are certainly arguments to be made for him, but, you know, goes to Bryce Harper this year, and Juan Soto was obviously fantastic as well. I just like we've seen plenty of Fernando Tatis Jr. no doubters, I look forward to the season where the MVP race is a Fernando Tatis Jr. no doubter. That'll be fun.
Which it's going to happen one of these years. We look at it and just go, yeah, there's don't even bother having a vote.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and hand it to him now.
But then, like, he'll get 29 first place votes, and then Dansby Swanson will get, like, one for hitting 275 with 20 homers and some good defensive metrics.
Yeah.
And that'll spoil the episode for you. You won't be able to get your mind off that.
Because the thing is, you're right.
Like, dang it should have been unanimous.
Like, no, the thing is, you're absolutely right, which is ridiculous to think about. By the way, you know what's really kind of crazy? Is right now, Fernando Tatis Jr., at the age of 22, has 81 home runs, right? Of course, all in a Padre uniform, which means he is mathematically halfway to Nate Colbert's franchise record of 163 home runs, which means by the time he's 24, he could become the franchise all-time home run king.
Well, and he did that in that three seasons in which he played 84, I forget exactly the number, but a 60-game season and then 130. So
yeah, that's what's crazy. 84, 50-something, and 130.
He might reach that in like August of 2023 in his fifth Major League Baseball season.
It's possible. That's what's nuts. Now, is that an indication of just how good he is or an indictment of how bad the Padres organization has been?
Yeah. Either way, all that matters is what we got going on now, and it's pretty darn good. We haven't, I don't know about next week, Thanksgiving. If we'll have,
we're taking the week off.
We're taking the week off. Okay. Derek made the call.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Always appreciate being with you. Thankful for you and thankful for our listeners and the folks that engage with us and get excited about it. Makes it a lot of fun. So enjoy your holiday. And if there's no need for an emergency episode or something between now and then, we'll catch up with you in a couple weeks. Thanks for listening.
Gobble, gobble.